always sitting here. I'm always helping you with your girl problems. You're always helping me with my girl problems. Where do we end up?
Here.
Exactly. Because neither one of us can handle a woman all by ourselves.
I'm trying.
I've tried. We don't have it. But maybe the two of us working together at full capacity could do the job of one normal man.
And each of us would only have to be like a half man. That sounds about right.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
I'm Doug Stanhope, and if you're listening to this podcast, don't take my word for it. I got tricked into this in a merch booth.
It's the homemade broadcast.
The what podcast?
The homemade broadcast.
Homemade?
Homemade broadcast.
The homemade podcast.
Yes, sir.
This is very homemade right here. This shit right here, that homemade.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Will the soundtrack kindly produce a sound? Go on, don't be nervous. Go ahead. Any sound? Well, that isn't quite what I had in mind.
It is the homemade broadcast, HMB 151, right here on RadioSt.Pete.com, Sunday 6:15. Welcome to the program. Don't forget to check out the replay at Mondays 10 p.m., Tuesdays 4:15 a.m., and at 6 a.m., bright and early on Tuesday morning. It goes right up on podcast at HMBRadio.com. Subscribe, share, rate. Rate the show. That would be nice, even if it's... Well, don't give a bad review. I'd rather have nothing than a bad review. But if that's how you really feel, I can't stop you from expressing yourself. I mean, this is what this country's all about. Freedom of speech, folks, right? Amy Schumer's in some hot water in the Tampa area because she said wrote a stupid joke about Tampa as a city. She said something about that Tampa people can't read, so she won't have to worry about them seeing this. And then she wrote JK, 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 but not really K. Terrible joke, not very funny. But are we really going to lampoon this girl for making an attempt at humor? Is that what this new culture is about? Because I don't want to be a part of this. Sure, not her best stuff. Agreed. But be honest, if she wrote this about Philadelphia or Cleveland, you know, you may get a few chuckles out of the Tampa Bay area because those towns suck, right? Sure, we've got our problems, but we adapt, we persevere, we have tough skins. We don't let comedians get us upset, or at least we shouldn't. What is the matter with you people? Why are you mad at her? You have to have the attempt at humor. You have to at least push the boundary to try to see if it's funny. I mean, maybe your editor should have caught it, but editors aren't comedians. They don't know what's funny. She's a funny comedian. Sure, she's been under fire for stealing bits. And she just is under fire for her own free speech suppression, is going to fire Kurt Metzger from her program, even though he probably won her an Emmy, because Kurt said if you're raped, you should go to the police. That's pretty much it. And people got mad at him and are demanding that he is fired now for that. Guess what? Nobody wants rapists on the streets. Nobody likes rapists. This fairy tale world that you people live in, that this is a rape culture, is absurd. And I even said it absurd to get the point across. Nobody wants these things that you complain about. I don't want a rapist on the streets. Call the cops if you are raped, okay? Please. I don't want those people around to rape some more. Enough of this. Please. I beg you. Sorry. Sorry. I don't know. I just wanted to talk about Amy Schumer and her dumb joke. But it's hard to defend her sometimes because she was such a open. I think she even said that she abused the system, like she was some out of control, wacky chick. And then now all of a sudden she's a super liberal chick who, you know, talks about stuff. I don't know, whatever she's bitching about this week. Up there, with, right up there, on par with Lena Dunham, her too. I can't stand her. Show's pretty good, though. I do like her, the girl show. At least I did. I didn't watch the last season, but show was pretty good. But anyways, leave Amy Schumer alone, okay? It was a dumb joke. Big deal. It's Tampa. We know what Tampa is. So let's toughen up a bit. Let's move on. Stop getting upset. Stop letting people get you upset. You're not forced to be here. If you love it, great. Be a part of it. Let's continue to make Tampa Bay great. Not even again. We're just making it great. We're going to keep it rolling, folks. God. So this week on the broadcast, we have Daniel Jones. He's from Concrete. I found him. He does like short documentaries, explores different things. I found him because they had an ad for this documentary called Deckhands that's about Madeira Beach. And I guess he lives right here in St. Pete, but he has stuff. I saw something about they have this feature like who listens to blank, and then it's like a musician. And then so they went out to L.A., and I watched the one about Young Lean, who I didn't even know who that was until I watched a documentary. It's like a white rapper from Norway or Sweden or somewhere up there. And he does, like, this stuff. So they did a documentary on him, but I'm really interested in him because he did the Madeira Beach documentary on Deckhands, focusing on the fishing culture that's down here in Madeira Beach. The I know Madeira Beach well. It's a fisherman community. I had friends that lived there. I used to hang out there all the time. Notorious drug abusers, alcoholics. It's a fascinating subculture. But they also talk about the system of how, what did they call it? Basically, you're allowed a certain amount of a catch, and it's brokered out. So the government says you can catch this many pounds. And so they talk about that, and I think part three really gets into that. I haven't seen it yet, but you should check it out. So Daniel Jones from Concrete will be here shortly. Make sure you check out Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. They've got a brand new food menu, which they had Korean barbecue tacos. And I was like, whoa, because that is quite a step up from just sandwiches and fries. Draven down there is cooking it up. So they got a brand new menu. I think they're going to have to change their name to Sly Bar and Grill because it's actually like a real place to go eat now. No more of this. I mean, the sandwiches were fine. Don't get me wrong. They were good. I had a bite of one time. It was delicious. I actually haven't eaten there yet. I probably should. But, yeah, brand new menu just rolled out. Always got drink specials going on. 2061 Central Avenue. Check out slybar.com. Go visit them. Tell them I sent you. And they'll say, cool, that's awesome. We love that guy. They love me. I love them. It's a true American love story, folks. And then, of course, Truvy Salon and Spa. Chrissy Parker down there at 8908 4th Street North, number B. It says hashtag B. I'm assuming that's unit B. Why do they put a number next to it if it's not a number? That's right in St. Pete. Check out truvysalonandspa.com, and you can reach her at 727-329-9751. I wonder if she won Best of the Bay or not. I know that wrapped up finally. That's good. Hopefully. I keep my fingers crossed for her. I like to, my friends support me, I support my friends. You know, that's how we do it. That's how we live in this crazy world, you know. If you want to get a hold of the show, check out our voice number. You can leave a text message, a voicemail call, 813-693-2124. If you want to get in contact, you can email me, thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. You can always get me at the website, hmbradio.com, facebook.com/hmbradio, Twitter, home_made_man. We got the open mics every second and fourth Tuesday at Sly Bar, celebrating, just wrapped up our second year there. I can't believe it. It's already been 2 years. Sometimes I complain about the progress that I'm making in my life, and then I think, wow, it's already been 2 years at Sly Bar. I should be way farther. It's even worse than I thought. No, I'm just kidding. And then every Thursday at Yard of Ale, St. Pete, I do that mic with John Jacobs from Cigar City Comedy. I told John, look, you still have this 15 minutes of fame from the MTV stuff, kind of. People still recognize him. I'm like, just, I know it's really weird, but get a poster of yourself with the MTV credit on there and just list the open mics. Like, maybe more people would come out to see you. But I know it's kind of a weird idea. I wouldn't want to do it either. And we'll see what he does. But that's what we should do, probably. John's runs, like, I think he's running 6 mics now, which is crazy. Doesn't have a job, just runs mics. Pretty great. So anyways, all right, Daniel Jones from Concrete will be here talking deckhands. We're just going to talk about what he's doing in general. It looks like some pretty exciting stuff. Reminds me kind of like of a Vice feel to it, raw documentaries and shorts. So Daniel Jones from Concrete. All right, Danny, welcome, man. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Hanging in there. Yeah, these spots, it's hard to find a parking spot in here. I don't even have a parking spot.
No?
No, it's terrible.
I thought you at least got one on the side.
When I rented the place, I figured that was part of the deal. And then I signed the lease, and I was like, so which spot is mine? And she's like, oh, no, those are all gone.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So anyways, tell me about Concrete.
Concrete's a company I started back in 2011.
Here, pull that mic up. You can move that as much as you want to so it's comfortable.
Sorry. Back in 2011, I started the company. It was actually, when I first started, it was an ad agency. Basically, me and a couple friends were doing ad campaigns and commercials for different brands, companies, locally around here. And then we branched off into some bigger brands, some national brands, like Land Rover USA. Did some stuff with Hulk Hogan, did some stuff for Lamborghini, DuPont Registry, a handful of brands. And as time went on, we just eventually started creating a bunch of our own content. And then in the past year and a half to 2 years, we've just spent more than 50% of our time creating our own content, putting it online and that kind of stuff. Sorry.
So no more ad stuff, though?
Yeah, we still have an ad company. We still have the ad agency, which is our bread and butter. But I tend to stick more to our content kind of stuff. I have other people that do the kind of advertising stuff like that. And personally, I'm not really that much into I've never really liked doing advertising and creating, you know, commercials for other companies, because most of the companies that we work with, I like to pick companies that are very unconventional. You know, most sane business people don't like spending more money than they're going to make on a campaign. You know, it's kind of the people who are going to spend money on a crazy, you know, out there idea that's the kind of people that we like to work with.
Yeah, it's the same with, like, graphic design. I got a bunch of friends who are graphic designers, and then they know what they want already. They just don't know how to execute it, but then they don't really know what they want either, and that's why they hire somebody creative. Right. And I would imagine it's the same thing with ad people.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm sure a lot of people struggle with it, and I'm sure that you know people in the industry, and I know people in the industry who struggle with it all the time, and it's just something that I just really wanted to get away from, and I wanted to make content, you know, the main source of revenue for our company, but it's not there yet, but hopefully one day.
Well, it takes a lot of work, man. Yeah. I think, what do they say, 5 years before you turn a profit or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. People quit before then usually, but.
Yeah, I know. But that's good, because that leaves people like you who are perseverant that will rise to the top. Even if you're not good, talent's only going to get you so far in this world. The perseverance and just stick-to-itiveness is really what matters. And then you got to sprinkle some luck in there. There's other little things, but, and then, you know, talent goes a long way too. So it started out as an ad agency, but then you started getting into more artistic things. I found you from an advertisement on Facebook for, it sparked my interest because it was Madeira Beach.
Right.
And deckhands. I have some experience with Madeira Beach. I grew up here. So I know what the scene is down there.
Yeah.
One of my really good friends lived next to a fisherman for a while in some little duplex thing. And the lifestyle was crazy. Lots of drugs.
Yeah.
lots of alcohol. So how did, what sparked your interest in covering the fisherman scene?
Well, Deckhands was funny. It was I also grew up in St. Pete Clearwater area, and I've lived here my whole life. And one of my good friends that was working with me at the time, you know, we were kind of scoping out some ideas for some different series, documentaries to put out on our website. And it was actually his idea to cover some of these guys, these commercial fishermen that live in Madeira Beach and around that area. We really had no idea what to expect. You know, I know a lot of commercial fishermen, none like that, but a lot of like the guys who fish for the restaurants, like Salt Rock and those kind of places. So we had no idea what to expect. We just kind of showed up on Madeira Beach one day with a couple video cameras and found that guy, Shane Lee, who's in the very first episode of Deckhands. And we had no idea what was going to happen. We just kind of showed up at one of the boat docks there, and a guy said, yeah, go to that bar, Screwy Louie's, down the street and see who you find. And we found him, and you can. That's basically episode one.
He is a very good mascot of, yeah, of what I think of Madeira Beach. Crazy. I'm sure there's some stuff that you couldn't even show with that guy. He lives on a houseboat. Yeah. He's really into metal. Not like old metal, though, like Marilyn Manson type stuff.
Yeah, he loves Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie and Ozzy.
And he's got his own laser light show that he set up for you. I saw that. That was pretty... Did you ever think at some point you were going to get murdered by this man?
It crossed my mind once or twice. I thought I was either going to get murdered or catch MRSA at the very most. But luckily, I got out of there clean and alive.
He was, like I said, a mascot of the city. But he's kind of an endearing figure, too. You kind of feel... Well, not bad for him, but he seems like he enjoys his life and he likes what he does.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a general consensus for most of the guys there. They do enjoy their lives and the people around them, and they're very social people. It's like a very small little community there, and you know, there's a lot of obviously drugs and alcohol that go along with it, but they're very relatable guys, you know, relatable people. They're easy to get along with. They mean well, and they all have good hearts from the people that I've met.
Yeah.
So,
so what was it about the documentary genre that sparked your interest in it, and why did you want to do it?
Like I said, I really just wanted to go document people and the culture around there. And, you know, I'd heard from people because I've grown up there and I've driven past that that beach since I was born. Just discovering something like Shane Lee the first time we went was something that I thought we had to put out for people to see. You know what I mean? So from then on, I just kept going back and meeting more people and covering more stuff and learning more and more about it, and that's it. Just decided to cut it up into a series of episodes and put it out and see what people thought about it and try to educate some people at the same time.
Did you have any surprises when you were filming?
What do you mean surprises?
Something that maybe was shocking that you didn't even expect, because I mean, you're from the area.
Everything was Shane, from Shane Lee to that guy Space to... there's another lady we met named Hollywood Kim, who is probably Shane Lee times 10 as far as mind-blowing, which you'll see in the next two episodes.
Are there four total?
There's going to be four, at least four. There might be five. Depends.
When did you start filming this?
2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Started shooting it in October of 2014.
And when did you wrap?
We just finished up in June.
Oh, my gosh, you've been hanging out with this guy for a couple of years?
No, luckily I've only hung out with him about 3 or 4 times. he's hard to find, actually. A lot of those people are hard to find. His boat, which you'll find out in the next video, sunk. And he got in a bunch of trouble with the city, a bunch of fines and, I think, jail time because of the boat sunk, and he didn't have money to pay to get it pulled out of the water. So now he's living in an apartment right on the beach there, on Madeira Beach.
He's kind of a tragic figure, too. I think that's part of it because I think, like I said, he enjoys his life. He likes what he does. Obviously, he's not thrilled with what he's being paid, but I think he also understands that this is his lot in life, and it's probably not going to end well for him. He's not going to be living till he's not going to be one of those centenarians that lives till he's 100 years old.
Probably not. Yeah, I don't. It seems like those people have, they know what they got, and they've kind of settled for the life that they live. And I don't know. My opinion on it is it's a shame they're not taken, you know, better care of. But there's two sides to everything.
Well, there's. I mean, they could always do something else. I mean, right. you got to have some personal accountability there too.
Right.
And sorry to say, but they don't look like the most skilled people on the planet either. So there's only so much they can do. But they were talking about the quota system.
Yeah.
And is that something that you knew going into it, or did you find that out when you were making it?
I found that out while we were making that. I had no idea about the quota system before I started shooting that. I didn't plan on that being a part of it. I really only wanted to document the people, like the fishermen and their lifestyles. And then learning about the quota system, that just naturally, I felt like that had to go into it to kind of show the two sides of the industry that no one really knows, the two polarizing sides, because there's no real middle ground when it comes to the quota system. Either people are extremely against it or they're very for it.
So let's tell the listeners, like, what does that mean? What does the quota system mean?
The quota system is basically 10 years ago, the federal government came up with a plan to... So before that, actually, rewind 15 years ago to 20 years ago, if you watch the second episode, it kind of explains how the government said the Gulf of Mexico is allowed to catch this many pounds of a certain species of fish, whether it be red grouper, red snapper, whatever. And once you hit that limit, you have to stop fishing for those fish, and you can't catch any more. So basically people would just fish all year around to try to make their money, and the limit would be hit 4 or 5 months before the end of the year. So everyone had to stop fishing, or the price of fish would go up, you know, 10 times for the restaurants and everyone else involved in the industry. So after that, you know, went on for so long, the government decided to change it and give what's called catch shares. So they basically took, like, for example, 10 million pounds of red grouper, and they said, we're going to pick certain people who have been in the industry for a certain amount of time or own boats, and we're going to give them each a piece of this pie of this 10 million pounds of fish that are allowed to be caught each year. And we're going to give it to them each year, every year. And, you know, it was only the people who had registered boats, who owned boats, or had registered a certain amount of, you know, owned commercial fish houses or restaurants, stuff like that. And it wasn't the smaller guys like Shane Lee or whatever who didn't pay their taxes or didn't, you know, get paperwork, didn't have an address where they got mailed something by the government to fill out to try to, you know, get a piece of this stock in the sea. So basically, over the past 10 years, after all this stock was handed out to the higher-up fishermen and boat owners, they sold some of it, or what they're allowed to do now is they're allowed to lease it. So they take, if I get 100,000 pounds a year of red snapper, I'm allowed to lease that for $1 a pound to any other fisherman or boat owner that I want.
So theoretically, you could sit back and just sell your portion and not do anything and just collect on the lease.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like owning land or owning an apartment building or owning a hotel. You know what I mean? You own the property and you just basically rent it out to people all year.
But it's not you're paying for it.
It was the average
of what you were catching, right? So you got to a certain point, the government steps in, say, well, you're catching about this much
every
year, so this is what we're going to allow you.
Right.
And at that point, you can just retire.
That's exactly
the problem in the system there.
Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, someone, for example, sitting on Wall Street could decide it was a good investment and say they wanted to buy 500,000 shares of Red Grouper, and they could be, you know, sitting up in New York collecting $500,000, $1 million a year off never even seeing the ocean. You know what I mean? And that's all rented out to whoever. You know, it could be through one big fish house who could sublease it to other fishermen. And then some people bought, you know, a lot of people around here have purchased shares that they didn't get because they weren't fishing, you know, 10 years ago. So it's a very polarizing topic. A lot of people who own shares are also that I've met against them, who don't think that they're, you know, morally a good option. I think there's better options out there. And, you know.
Yeah, it seems like it kind of creates a monopoly there for a certain class, I guess, you know, just based on your performance from future years. Kind of, it seems like a silly way to do it. Why not just have, this is what we got this year, guys. This is what you can catch. When it's done, it's done. It seems like that would be a better way.
Yeah. I don't know. It's I don't know. We'll see in the next couple of years if anything changes. I don't know if it will, but. There's a lot more stuff that happens in the next couple of videos that's pretty interesting, and I think it makes sense on both sides. So if you listen to the guys like Shane Lee, you know, those guys, you understand why they're so pissed off. And then you listen to the other guys, the guys who own quota, when they explain it, you know, it's kind of like a balanced thing for me, but a lot of people feel really strongly about it.
Does a quota change every year, or is it just a same number every year?
The value of it, I believe, changes. Yeah, it depends on how much they're catching, I think. It is both the price to sell, like the buying price, as well as the leasing price changes. It fluctuates, but it stays around for like red grouper and snapper. It stays around $1 to $2 a pound. Towards the end of the year, it gets a lot more expensive because there's not much left. The beginning of the year, you know, everybody's got it, so it sells and leases for a lot cheaper.
Right. It seems like with most when government intervenes, it's for a good reason. I understand that you want to protect the species there, but it seems to me that there's also some inequality with who's able to catch these things and why. Was it really just based off of the average catch for the year over a certain amount of years, or did people lobby to get more?
I think a lot of people lobbied. One of the commercial fishermen, one of the boat owners that doesn't fish anymore, who I met, he went up to Washington a few times to lobby for it. And he owned a few boats back in the day, but what he did was he purchased more boats over the past 5 to 6 years, which got him more quota. So sometimes, like, when they buy boats, they come with quota.
And they don't even use them probably a lot of time. They just have them in there.
I mean, they will use them. If they buy the boats, then the boats have the quota, they might as well use them. You know, sometimes they'll just hire captains and deckhands like Shane Lee to go out for 2 weeks and run them. And, you know, it makes perfect sense.
So Shane's not pulling his own boat and fishing. He's kind of just a deckhand.
No. He jumps from boat to boat. He'll fish for... You know, he'll go on a 2 to 3 week trip on one boat, come back, and he might go to another boat after that. You know, sometimes he'll be on land for 2 to 3 weeks or a month even. Sometimes those guys take like 3 months off. Depending on how the fishing is, those guys can actually make a decent amount of money. I mean, those guys can go out and make $5,000 a trip, and they'll stay on land for 2 months, 3 months.
And booze for two months. Yeah, right. that's what my buddy's neighbor used to do.
Okay.
It was a woman, too. She was a scallywag, if I've ever seen one. Yeah, she was out of her mind.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure she was doing meth. And
it might have been Kim.
I don't remember her name. She scared me. I didn't really have much interaction with her.
Wow.
So you did this documentary, but you do other stuff, too. I saw the one, it's like, who listens to this musician? And it's actually, do you have affiliates all throughout the country, or how does that work?
No, I have a small group of people that I work with that will go out and shoot those things with me or for me. I have people out there, like in L.A. and New York or whatever, that I'm friends with who will go out and shoot that stuff. And for most of them, I'm there shooting them. But we just find bands or artists that we find interesting, and we just go out and we interview the fans, just like a comedic point of view, kind of like something on Howard Stern.
Did you do so? What's your main, or do you have a main focus? I mean, it seems like you're kind of all over the place with what you're doing
with the content.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the main focus is just, you know, stuff that we find entertaining. Honestly, there's no specific genre that we stick to. You know, we do one series called Life for Sale. It's basically just about a real estate investor who lives in St. Pete, who was born in Queens and raised in the Bronx by like pimps and mafia and people like that. And he's a really interesting guy. I've been shooting with him for the past couple of years, and we originally started shopping his show, or we developed a pilot, which is another thing I used to do. Is I used to shoot a lot of TV pilots and shop them around. But what we did was we shot a pilot for him about 2 years, 3 years ago, and we shopped it around to a bunch of networks, like Spike and A&E and those guys. We actually got greenlit by Spike, and it died at the greenlight meeting due to the CEO of Viacom didn't like it. But we had so much footage after shooting with him for so long, we just cut it into our own episodes and put them on our channel.
That's the great thing about this new media thing and the internet, man, is you can just do your own thing. And if the content's good, people will eventually find it.
Yeah, that's the hope, at least. We have a lot of content, so we might as well put it up there.
Yeah. What projects are you working on now?
Well, we're still wrapping up some editing with the Deckhands thing. We're still shooting a lot of the Does Anyone Listen To stuff. Still continuing the Life for Sale stuff. I'm actually just started working on another series, kind of like a web series, with a Atlanta hip hop artist. His name's Pee Wee Longway. He's big in the Atlanta hip hop scene. Working with another guy out of Tampa who shoots a lot of music videos for a lot of rappers, a lot of big time rappers like Plies and those Atlanta guys, Gucci Mane and those kind of guys.
What's the focus on that?
It's kind of just like a lifestyle vlog type series, just kind of like, you know, following him throughout his life, what he does in different cities, traveling with his group of people, and just documenting his lifestyle, really.
Danny Jones from Concrete's joining me on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So how did you get into making films? Did you go to school for it, or did you just kind of fall into it?
No, I fell into it. When I was really, really young, me and my buddies would just run around town skateboarding and surfing and filming it, and I would always be the one that takes the footage home and edits it. So one day, a friend of mine's dad called me up and said, "Hey, do you want to go fishing in Puerto Rico and film it on this guy's boat?" And I was like, "Sure." And they sent me to Puerto Rico on this private plane, and I ended up shooting part of a show for ESPN. It was like a fishing series called BXRL, and it was for ESPN, and I was like 17, I think. And I ended up jumping off the boat, you know, filming them like fighting this marlin and sharks swimming around trying to eat it. And I started doing that, you know, I did that probably till I was like 20. And then ever since then, I started making commercials, and just, you know, that's how I got into the whole advertising thing. Started my own advertising company and shooting a lot of commercials, shooting a lot of TV pilots. I shot a bunch of features, like Dolphin Tale, working a lot of stuff with the guy from who produced the Blair Witch Project, and just kind of just fell into that whole world. And I tried going to college. I did like a year at SPC.
Wasn't for you?
No.
Sounds like you don't even need it, man. I mean, you kind of just did it. You learn by doing. That's the big thing.
Yeah, yeah. It was. College definitely wasn't for me. I learned a whole lot by just, I guess, getting lucky and meeting a lot of people and getting to work when I was young, and learned a lot doing that.
How old are you now?
I just turned 29.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, man, sounds like you're kind of just doing your own thing. What is the future for Concrete? What do you see that?
I don't know. I'm just going to keep growing it and try to turn it into a larger media entity. I mean, my goal is like the HBO of the internet, really, with lots of cool, a lot more cool content than that. Like, you know, like originals. I like original, you know, fictional series or documentary series, movies, stuff like that.
So tell me about growing up here in Tampa Bay. Where'd you go to school?
I went to school at Seminole. I went to Seminole High.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Seminole Middle, Seminole High. And then, like I said, I went to SPC for like a year.
And then just got right into the filmmaking.
And then that was it, yeah. My mom really wanted me to go to. I applied for a bunch of film schools, and I actually got a letter of recommendation for the film school in UCF in Orlando, which is actually a very good, like one of the top film schools in the country. And I got recommended by one of the producers of the Blair Witch Project, who is like one of their most famous graduates from their film program. And they still didn't accept me. My GPA or something wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
So that kind of was like, you know.
I was thinking about doing film school after college. And I looked into Florida State, and my grades were not good either.
Yeah.
But they were really rude. Like the lady was like, I was like, hey, I'm just trying to get some information on how to submit something to apply. And she says, you're not going to get in.
Really?
And I was like, whoa, okay. But I kind of understand it now, probably because, if you got a recommendation from this guy and still didn't get in, I'm definitely not going to go in cold in order to do that. Yeah. But, what are you going to do with a film? Even if you get a film degree, you're going to go be a PA somewhere.
Right.
And you're going to have to work your way up, starting as like an intern, basically. Why not just learn by doing and do your own stuff?
Yeah.
That seems like the way to go.
I've always been a big advocate of doing, you know, doing your own thing and kind of anti-school, just because of my mom when I was growing up, just always like wanted me to, you know, be in school. She was a school teacher her whole life, still is a college. She works at Eckerd, she's a professor there, and just always wanted to do the opposite and not have to go to school. And you know, a lot of people I know that have gone to school for years and years, they still have no idea what they're doing with their lives, and they just don't have that fire inside of them where they, you know, do whatever you have to do to make it happen.
Yeah. I did school just because I guess that's what I'm supposed to do. My parents didn't go to college, but they were like, yeah, I guess. Do you want to go? And I was like, I don't really want to get a job. And they're like, all right, we'll go to college. So that's what I did. And then I got out of college, and I was like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You got to start over.
Start over. Figure it out, man. So, yeah, college is a waste of time for most people.
Yeah.
There isn't a big film scene here, but there kind of is. There's a lot of stuff happening here. I know a lot of actors that live here. Owen Harn lives here. He was in Vice Principals, some other movies and stuff. Things are popping off for him. What do you think needs to happen in order to get this area more on the map for film?
That's a good question. St. Pete, you're talking about?
Just the Tampa Bay area, or even Florida, for that matter.
I don't know. They shoot a lot of movies, and they shoot a ton of movies in Florida now. I feel like they're shooting more movies here than even in L.A. or.
Well, I know Atlanta is huge. Atlanta's like the jewel of the South for film.
Right.
And there has been some stuff. But didn't they do there was a big story that they were doing a movie about Ybor City, and they shot it in L.A. on a sound studio when they could have just filmed it in Tampa.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear about that.
I think the thing is the tax credential or credits or whatever is the thing with that.
Okay.
But I know they have shot some things. They're doing some movie. They did the Spring Breakers, and they're doing some other one that's filming now. I don't know what's in that. I know Owen's in that, though.
What did they do? They did Spring Breakers. They did both the Dolphin Tale movies. They did The Executioner. They did the Tim Burton movie that's about to come out. What's the other one with Channing Tatum they did? The two of them.
Oh, the dancing ones.
Yeah.
Hot Mike.
Magic Mike.
Magic Mike. That's it. Yeah, they shot a couple scenes at the Wilsons, I think it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know on a broader scale. I think they should do more stuff here. There's no big studios here, so I guess that's probably a big reason. But I think they're trying. The studios, they are trying to shoot a lot of features here.
I know there's a bunch of like indie projects. I subscribe to some like film casting thing on Facebook, and there's always casting calls, but I think they're all like not, you know, big movies, just independent type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's not really any like big time sound stages here or anything, you know, and then I don't know.
Do you even need those anymore?
Yeah, I mean, all I feel like pretty much every Marvel movie or every big budget, you know, like franchise movie is shot in a soundstage. At least a big chunk of it is.
Seems like you just take it and you can put anything into the computer now.
Yeah.
And just, well, you have to pay somebody to animate it and stuff. Right. But the animation is so good now that you can't even tell the difference. I know, like, Game of Thrones and stuff, they'll go shoot at these really beautiful places. Right. But they're still doing all this computer work to it. So it still takes a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what could be done, but I think something should be done. Bring more stuff here. Oh, they shoot a lot of stuff in Miami too, right? I mean,
I think so. Yeah, Ballers is shot down there, the HBO show. Yeah. So I guess there is some stuff. Hopefully, it will kind of blossom. I know Orlando's, you know, with Disney and everything. It seems like it's a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
But I know Owen. Like I said, he lives here.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Are you gonna move to LA?" And he was like, "Nah."
Really?
I live in Largo. I'm happy in Largo.
Really?
I mean, it might come down to it if something really pops off for him. But he's like, a lot of stuff films in Orlando or Atlanta.
Okay.
So that's a $80 plane ride if I need to get to Atlanta. Right. And just leave it at that.
He's on Vice Principals, you said.
Vice Principals, he played.
Still got to watch that.
Jackie, the next door neighbor. I think he's in 3 episodes.
Oh, is he?
I saw on IMDb. Which I was going to ask him to come back on. He came in last year. And then I got a Twitter message from him like, "Hey, can I get 15 minutes on the show?" I'm like, "Just come, come in, come do a whole one. Come on, let's sit down." So hopefully he'll be back in soon.
That's awesome.
So, all right, man, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, man.
Give out your social media website where people can find you and all that.
Yeah, the YouTube channel is just youtube.com/concrete with a K at the beginning. It's KONCRETE, and the website's just concrete.com.
Got Twitter or
Yeah, so we got Twitter. Twitter, it's like Twitter/Concrete Inc, INC at the end, and the Facebook. I don't know what the Facebook is. Just go to the YouTube. YouTube is the website. Those are the only thing that matter.
I think it's Concrete Inc.
Is it Concrete Inc?
Well. Okay, yeah, it looks like it. So when's the next Deckhands coming out?
The next Deckhands will be out in about a week.
And then there's another one after that.
And then there's another one after that. There might be a fifth installment, but there's definitely two more coming out, and the fourth one is going to be nuts.
Cool, man. I can't wait to see them. The first two are very interesting. I enjoyed watching them.
Thank you,
and
man.
I like the style of them and everything too.
Yeah.
You did a good job with them.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, buddy. All right, there you go. Danny Jones, Concrete Inc. Just go to concrete.com. Check out Deckhands. Very interesting documentary. Very interesting people from the Tampa Bay area that I knew about that life from just looking in on it from a wide range with binoculars from a window. And you get the insights of what these people are. They're real folks, though, man. This is what exists out there. Real folks. All right, so maybe you want to become a sponsor of this podcast. I was just talking to Danny off air. Hey, I'm all for it. You should totally do that. Email me, thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. Thank you to Sly Bar and Truvy Salon and Spa for getting my back, supporting. Make sure to come check out the open mics at Sly Bar every second and fourth Tuesday, and then every Thursday at Yard of Ale St. Pete. Subscribe to the podcast, hmbradio.com. Rate it. Like it, love it, share it. I'll talk to you all next week, I guess. Have a fantastic one, folks. Homemade Broadcast, Radio St. Pete. See ya. Forgot. Stay tuned. Frank Rivera from the Music Room and the Jazz Show coming up next on Radio St. Pete if you're listening there. And the Indie Circuit at 10. Okay, this time I'm out. For real. Sorry about that. See ya.